rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded? Here's Tom Martin.
Rape as a legal technique of interrogation? One of my senators, Gordon Smith, just voted for that, or just said that he would on the floor of the United States Senate. Yeah, you know, I'm not exaggerating. This from today's New York Times. Rushing Off a Cliff is the title of the editorial. You can read it over at nytimes.com if you want to check it out on the web, or you can pick up a New York Times anywhere and read it. Here's what happens, they write, when this irresponsible Congress railroads a profoundly important bill to serve the mindless politics of a midterm election. The Bush administration uses Republicans' fear of losing their majority to push through ghastly ideas about anti-terrorism that will make American troops less safe and do lasting damage to our 217-year-old nation of laws while actually doing nothing to protect the nation from terrorists. Democrats betray their principles to avoid last-minute attack ads. Our democracy is the big loser. And they point out this serves a cynical goal. Republican strategists think they can win this fall not by passing a good law, but by forcing Democrats to vote against a bad one so they can be made to look soft on terrorism. And then with regard to the rape provision, they go through the Geneva Convention. We're going to cover all this stuff here today, but one of the provisions, which is just absolutely mind-boggling. The definition of torture is unacceptably narrow, a virtual reprise of the deeply cynical memos the administration produced after 9/11. I'm reading from the New York Times editorial today. Rape and sexual assault are defined in a retrograde way that covers only forced or coerced activity and not other forms of non-consensual sex. The bill would effectively eliminate the idea of rape as torture. This is what the Republicans are pushing through. And here's why the Democrats are afraid of it. And this is, and by the way, we need to be calling our senators and saying, please vote no on this and filibuster it. In fact, as the New York Times wraps up their editorial today, if ever there was a moment for a filibuster, this is it. They are so right. They are so right. Toll-free number for Congress. This gets you to the White House switchboard and just ask for your senators. And if you don't know who your senators are, just tell them what state you live in. Hi, I'm calling from Wisconsin. I'm not sure who my senators are. Would you please tell me? Yes, your senators are Feingold and whoever the other one is. I'm forgetting. And they will. And you say, okay, would you please put me through the office of you know, one or the other? Bang. Off you go. 866-808-0065. That's toll-free. Or if you want to call the direct line and free up the toll-free number for folks who don't have 3 minutes, the direct line is 202-225-3121. You'll find that also reprinted on our homepage over at tomhartman.com. Scroll down the page a little ways, and it's there in the bullet points of, you know, stuff that's happening. 202-225-3121 to call your senator and say, I'm sorry, this is not acceptable. This is the destruction of American democracy. We are watching the death of democracy. Today could be the worst day in the history of the United States since the Alien and Sedition Acts were passed in, as I recall, March of 1798. The Alien and Sedition Acts, which were repealed 2 years later. Well, actually, they expired. I know that they expired in March of 1800 when Thomas Jefferson was sworn in as president. In fact, the lawmakers, it was passed by only one vote, the Alien Sedition Acts, that allowed President John Adams to throw newspaper publishers in jail for speaking out against him, which he did, by the way. Every single one of them, every single 20 of them, 20 newspapers that were publishing anti-John Adams editorials, he threw them in jail. Shut down their newspapers. This is mind-boggling. First of all, this is not the compromise that McCain and Warner and Lindsey Graham worked out. That went to the House, and the House jerry-rigged this thing, made it even worse. Very much like, in many regards, very much like the original bill, sent it back to the Senate. That's what the Senate's debating right now. Number one. Number two, why are the Democrats afraid of this thing? The Democrats are afraid of this thing because of the Max Cleland story. Now, listen carefully. This is important stuff. Max Cleland was my senator for 12, 13 years when I lived in Georgia. He was a good man. He was a conservative Democrat. He was a pro-military Democrat. He was the head of the Armed Services Committee in the Senate. He was right up there. I mean, he was, I'm not sure if he was the number one guy, but he was on that committee. He understood the military. He was a gung-ho guy. Max Cleland served in Vietnam. He lost his right arm and both his legs. He came back to serve this country in the United States Senate. In the year 2002, in those midterm elections, the Republicans decided that they were going to whip up fear and hysteria and got pushed through the Patriot Act right on the tail of an anthrax attack. And by the way, there was in the news yesterday that some radio station got what they thought was anthrax. It's like these guys. In any case, there were two senators who could have stopped the Patriot Act. Senator Leahy, who is the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, and Tom Daschle, who is the head of the Senate, the leader of the Senate Majority Leader. Because the Democrats, for that brief period of time, that 6 months or so before the elections, after Jim Jeffords defected from the Republican Party and became an independent, the Democrats controlled for 6 months or so, they controlled the Senate. There were two senators who could have stopped the Patriot Act. The Republicans wanted that Patriot Act to pass because they were going to use a vote against it to beat the bejesus out of any Democrat in the 2002 election, in November of 2002. Those two senators, as I said, Pat Leahy from Vermont, Tom Daschle from South Dakota, those were the only two elected officials who received anthrax in the mail. And surprise, surprise, the Patriot Act passed. Now, my recollection is that Max Cleland voted against it. There might have been some other piece of legislation that he voted against that was, you know, some military authorization. And please correct me if I'm wrong on this. Feel free to give us a call at 866-440-8466. But this is my recollection. He voted against it. And then these ads began appearing in October, late October, early November, the first days of November 2002 in Georgia. Now, Max Cleland was, his opponent was a draft dodger, a Republican draft dodger, a chicken hawk by the name of Saxby Chambliss. And all the polls were showing that Cleland was ahead about 53%, and then Chambliss was running around 45%, 47%. I mean, there was some variation in the polls. But by and large, all the polls showed Cleland ahead, and Chambliss was losing. But by coincidence, that year, 2002, was the first year that Georgia became the first state in the United States to do the entire election statewide on paper-free, mostly Diebold voting machines. After the election, Bev Harris, poking around the back door of Diebold's website, actually with a Google search, found a folder in there called Rob Georgia, with Georgia voting totals and things on it. So the polls before the election, the polls after the election, they all showed Max Cleland won by four or five points. But according to the machines, Saxby Chambliss won by 4 or 5 points. Bobby Kennedy writes about this in the current issue of Rolling Stone. You can read it over at rollingstone.com or pick up a copy of Rolling Stone right now. I wrote about this 3 years ago. You can find those articles that I wrote for Alternet and for CommonDreams.org over at TomHartman.com. Click articles on democracy. Anyhow, the point is, the media spun Max Cleland's defeat as he was defeated because he dared to vote against the Patriot Act, because he didn't go along with the Republicans', you know, be afraid agenda. He wasn't tough enough. Now, first of all, I don't believe he lost. And secondly, that's the story that they're playing out. That's what John Boehner said the other day, the day before yesterday. He was basically saying that the Republicans were going to go after any Democrats who vote against this torture bill, this detainee act that is being debated in the Senate right now as we speak, that the Republicans are going to go against any of them essentially in the way that they went against Max Cleland in 2002. This is a repeat, a complete repeat, complete with whipping up the war rhetoric. Now it's Iran, then it was Iraq. Karl Rove is playing the 2002 election strategy exactly the same. As they point out in the New York Times. And the Democrats this time, instead of rolling over and going along, should be standing up and saying, no, we are going to defend the values of this country. We are not going to take a pass on this. We're not going to do like Gordon Smith said on the floor of the Senate this morning. We'll pass it and we'll let the judiciary decide if it's legal. Give me a break. It's illegal. 16 minutes past the hour.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Lonely feelings deep inside. Find a corner where I can hide. Silent footsteps crowding me. Sudden darkness, but I can see. No sugar tonight, no coffee. No sugar tonight, my tea.
And welcome back. Listener-supported radio. Indeed, we are supported by our listeners. Let your radio station know you're listening. And support our sponsors. Sacred Ground Coffee, for example. Saving the planet one cup at a time. 1-800-425-2532 is their phone number. SacredGroundsCoffee.com, their website. And Small Dog Electronics, get the latest iPods now, 1-800-511-MAX, 511-M-A-C-S, smalldog.com, and the Organic Wine Company, 1-888-ECO-WINE, ecowine.com, their website. 22 minutes past the hour, our quote for the day from a Republican president. Theodore Roosevelt, 1918, said, "To announce that there must be no criticism of the president, or that we are to stand by the president, right or wrong, is not only unpatriotic and servile, but is morally treasonable to the American public." End of quote. Rushing off a cliff, the headline in the editorial in today's New York Times, you must read this. Senator Carl Levin, yesterday, speaking out from the floor of the United States Senate. "This provision is now so vaguely worded that it can only be that it can even be read to authorize the administration to abandon the presumption of innocence in trials by military commission." He talks about the court stripping provision in the bill. The bill before us expands that provision to eliminate habeas corpus rights and all other legal rights for aliens, including lawful permanent residents detained inside or outside the United States. In other words, we can go anywhere in the world and do anything we damn well please. George W. Bush can name anybody an enemy combatant and throw them into prison and never have them face their accusers. Never have them go before a court of law. Never have them know what they are charged with. And if he does decide to have a kangaroo court trial, he can use evidence against them that is hearsay. They have to prove that it's wrong. The government doesn't have to prove that it's true. This is bizarre. We have stepped through a mirror. We have dropped into the rabbit hole. I mean, these guys have to be on acid. I can't believe this. As Carl Levin said yesterday, "Consequently, even aliens who've been released from U.S. custody, such as the detainee that the Canadian government recently found was detained without any basis and subjected to torture." That's the guy that they snatched. The Canadian, we snatched him and we shipped him to Syria where he was tortured for 10 months. He was innocent. He had nothing to do with anything. Carl Levin says he would be denied any legal recourse as long as the United States continues to claim that they were properly held. In other words, a determination by the United States could not be contested even if there is overwhelming evidence that the claim is correct. What Senator Levin did not say is that he would filibuster this bill. And that's why we need to be calling our senators, toll-free, 866-808-0065, or 202-225-3121, the main switchboard at the at Capitol Hill, calling our senators and respectfully saying, please, filibuster this atrocious so-called detainee bill, this atrocious piece of legislation. This is incredible. The bill authorizes the use of evidence that is seized inside the United States without a search warrant. It does not even preclude the seizure of evidence without a warrant from U.S. citizens. In other words, you can be prosecuted for stuff that's grabbed without a warrant. They don't have to go before a judge. This is the end of the Fourth Amendment, the Fifth Amendment, the Sixth Amendment, and the Eighth Amendment. They're gone if this thing passes. The Bill of Rights, that 230 years of Americans have fought and died to defend, that the President of the United States, the Vice President of the United States, and every single member of the United States Senate and the House of Representatives took a pledge on oath. Their oath of office took a pledge not to defend the American people, not to defend the homeland, not to defend our economy or our borders. No, the pledge that they took was quite specific: to defend the Constitution of the United States of America. Period. End of sentence. That literally is all it says. This from paragraph 8, section 7. Section 1, Article 2 of the Constitution. Before he enter into the execution of his office, the President shall take the following oath or affirmation. I do solemnly swear or affirm that I will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States and will, to the best of my ability, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. Period. End of quote. Full stop. End of section. And the oath of office for senators and members of the House of Representatives is identical, except instead of president, it says of the United States Senate. These men and women took an oath to uphold and preserve and protect and defend the Constitution of the United States, and today it is being ripped into shreds. It is being riddled with bullet holes. It is being raped. It is being destroyed. It is being set on fire. It is being spit upon on the floor of the House of the Senate, the floor of the Senate right now. 27 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Anybody here see the noise, see the fear and commotion? I think we missed it. Anybody here see the love, see the hate, the emotion?
Welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. A place where reason is our lifestyle choice. The Tom Hartman Radio Program. Constitution of the United States being shredded on the floor of the Senate. It's going to be interesting to see how long this debate goes on. Right at this moment, as I'm speaking live, it is 9:30 in the morning Pacific time, 12:34 Eastern time. I know some of you are hearing this program time delayed, sometimes by an hour, sometimes by several. And I have heard from one senator's office that this debate may last until Saturday. I have heard from another senator's office that this debate will probably be resolved today and there'll be a vote. So if the vote has already happened, my apologies. Nonetheless, you should still contact your senator and find out how they voted. And if you are listening to us live, you should be, or even if not, give your senator a call, 866-808-0065. Or you can call them direct, 202-225-3121. And let us know what they say. You know, give us a call back and you know, let us know. Rye in Redmond, Washington on the line. Hey, Rye, welcome to the program.
Hi, I'm actually been trying to call my senator about this particular. I got a hold of Maria Cantwell's office, however, by a chance of luck. But, however, they seem to have disconnected the toll-free line, and they said, I think the message went something like this. This line has been disconnected. No other information is available.
Which toll-free line did you call?
It was a toll-free line. It was the 355, I think it was.
Yeah, that number was disconnected several weeks ago. Try this one. Write this down. 866. Okay. 866 is the toll-free number. 808-0065.
Okay. And I've also been trying to call through other channels, you know, and they've been shunting me to different bureaucracies that have nothing
Well, they're
to do.
they're all being slammed right now. I mean, everybody's being, you know, the senator's offices are being called. Today, the New York Times runs an editorial that says, if ever there was a time for a filibuster, this is the time.
No doubt.
You get it, that something's going on. But good on you, Rye, for calling. Did you get any feedback from Senator Cantwell's office? She's usually pretty good on this kind of thing.
Yeah. Basically, she just got the message. So.
Oh, okay, good. Well, you registered your vote with her office. That's the important thing. We need to be calling our senators and saying, not only do you have to vote against this bill has to be filibustered because the Republicans will push it through. The Republicans, they are going to push this thing through because it's a get-out-of-jail-free card for George W. Bush. What they're trying to do is make all the crimes that he has committed up to this point, and not just Bush, by the way, Rumsfeld and Cheney and Alberto Gonzalez and the private contractors in Iraq, all the civilians. This is not, they want to immunize all of them so that there won't be any possibility of impeachment if the Democrats take the House or the Senate. This does not immunize the military. So Lindy England is not going to get let out of the brig for making those guys climb onto a pyramid. It doesn't, because the military is subject to the Uniform Code of Military Justice. So this doesn't immunize them. What it does immunize are the corporations, the people working for Halliburton, the people working for Bechtel, the people working for Triad, the people working for Blackwater, the people working for the big corporations that are doing much of the interrogation work in Iraq and Afghanistan and around the world. And it immunizes the other civilians who might be subject to war crimes prosecutions. Civilians such as George Walker Bush, Dick Cheney, Don Rumsfeld, Alberto Gonzalez, and frankly, Bill Frist and his Republican compatriots and Denny Hastert and the Republicans in the House. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number, Vic in Cedar Creek, Texas. Hey, Vic.
Hi, Tom. Yeah, I'm as sad as when the first Bush 41 got first elected, but it's been sadness ever since. I call both my senators from Texas, John Cornyn, mm-hmm. who is former attorney general, and we call her Kay Baby Hutchison, who is a former treasurer of the local county here. Hutchison's office said that she hadn't made up her mind yet.
Oh, well, that's a good sign.
Yeah, I thought so. I said, well, you know, I told the gal that called me, if enough people call, well, maybe, you know, we could sway her, although she's a Republican, and she hasn't done anything in opposition yet. And Cornyn's office very sternly said, well, this bill just covers aliens and enemy combatants. And I said, well, he better read it a little closer.
Yeah.
But, you know, where he's going to go with it. But the only, you know, I think of a lot of people call, you know, 200 people call. What does that represent, like a quarter of a million or something?
The
stats on that?
Yeah, there are different rules of thumb that are used. But, you know, generally for every caller, you assume there's between 1 and 10,000 people who didn't call.
And I spent the nickel. You know, I dialed the 202 number.
Yeah.
I write them. I email them, and I get the BS canned letter back. But I thought this was urgent, and I've come to respect you and take your word for it. If Tom says call, I call.
Well, thank you, Vic. I also recommend that you read the editorial in the New York Times today. It's brilliant, and it just lays this out. And anybody on talk radio right now who is not talking about this topic, call them and get them talking about it. Bob in Flagstaff, Arizona. Hey, Bob.
Yeah, Tom. First of all, I have on my calling list 888-808-0065, not 866.
Oh, really?
I don't know if that's anyway. Just wanted to put that out there. But I was calling.
Have you called it recently?
Oh yeah.
And it works?
Yeah. And
okay,
unfortunately, my two senators.
David's checking it out right now.
Basically worthless.
Yeah.
With regard to Kyle and McCain, who they're shameless.
So McCain and both of them have said that they're going to go along with this thing. I mean, McCain thought that he had a compromise, and then they got over to the House, and they ripped out McCain's compromise, which I was still offended by. But this is even worse than I mean, we're back to the original bill here.
Right. Well, but what I called about was the question about Max Cleland you asked.
Yeah.
It wasn't the Patriot Act. It was the Homeland Security Act that he voted against because of the anti-union provisions.
That's right. That's right. Thank you so much for setting me straight, Bob, on that.
Keep after the senators.
I'll do it. Okay. Thanks a lot, Bob. Yeah, it was the creation of the Department of Homeland Security that Max Cleland voted against. That's right. And in retrospect, boy, was he right. Of course, they went after it, but went after him for it. And as I said, I don't think he lost that election. Joe in Provo, Utah. Hey, Joe.
Hey, Tom. How you doing, man? I'm crying here. You know, I'm just so outraged by this. I've been calling all of you.
Yeah, convert that into action. That's what we have to do.
I have. Here's what I'm doing, man. You know, I called my two senators, and I said, look, you know, the bottom line here is this isn't Germany, pre-World War II or World War II. This isn't Russia. This isn't China. This is America. My father fought against this kind of garbage. The fact that our houses of Congress are being used to even discuss torture when we already have laws on the books regarding all of this and just a historical narrative starting with George Washington all the way through World War II is an outrage. The fact that you people are even thinking about habeas corpus only indicates to me your treasonous effect or events that you're trying to foment upon the people. Wake up. Do your job. We pay you. It's time for you to start doing something for the people instead of start doing something for the corporations.
And what kind of response did you get from your two Utah senators?
I just tell them, I say, now, I want you to pass that on. You're going to pass it on? And they go, yeah, we will. I said, good, because you're as much responsible as they are. Anyone who's connected to this kind of thing, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, that's why these guys are all trying to immunize themselves in advance. I mean, During the Nuremberg war trials, there were some people involved in the German legislature who were hauled up on charges. I mean, they were considered complicit as well. So there's a lot of civilians, that is, senators and members of the House of Representatives, who are a little nervous. And they want to try and, you know, and then I caught Gordon Smith's speech this morning. He says, well, we'll pass this thing and then we'll let the judiciary decide whether the habeas corpus provisions are legal or not. Yeah, right. Republicans all of a sudden want activist judges to decide. It's tragic. Sonny in Sacramento, California, KSAC. Hey, Sonny.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to let you know that I called my, since I'm in California, obviously, I have two very liberal senators, thank God. And I called Senator Feinstein first because Boxer's a shoo-in. You know, she would never approve of anything like this. Feinstein's a little bit more on the, you know, corporate side or whatever. So I called her office first, and I reached the person who answers the phone, and I got so emotional, I actually started to cry because I just can't believe that my country would do this. I just can't believe that this is even being discussed. I can't believe that the thought's even being entertained. And after I went off on this rant, and she said, you know, she goes, you need to call the people. She goes, you know, you're singing to the choir, basically, is what she said. You need to call the senators that are actually thinking of approving this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, now, but they won't take a call from somebody who's not in their, you know, who's not one of their constituents. I tried emailing people like that, you know, and you know.
They're all ignoring email now. Calling is really the only way to
exactly.
get it. And if you send a letter, it takes a month and a half because it has to go through anthrax checks.
Exactly.
You know, I understand that Olympia Snow and Susan Collins in Maine are possible Republican swing votes on this thing.
Okay, hold on. Olympia Snow.
And Susan Collins. The two Republican senators from Maine. They're both relatively moderate, shall we say, Republicans. And they were kind of joining with McCain and Graham and Warner in the early days. Now, it looks to me like what McCain and Graham and Warner were doing was basically grandstanding. And in this whole thing that, oh, we're going to forge a compromise and we're going to stand up for the American people. Because when we talked to Senator Smith's office this morning, his office said, well, the senator is going to vote for the compromise. So what happened was McCain and Warner and Graham gave cover to the Bush administration by saying, oh, no, we're going to take all the awful stuff out of this. Then they send it off to the House. The House puts it all back in. They send it back to the Senate, and all Republicans can say, well, yeah, we're doing that compromise thing. They got so much publicity last week. No, it's not what's going on. 45 minutes past the hour.
The Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
As I went out walking the streets of Virginia, as I went out with George Allen one day, he spied a young man who appeared to be filming. He pointed him out, and then this he did say.
by your collar that you're a macaca. Though I ain't got a clue what that epithet means. I only speak French, 'cause I have a French mother. I think it just stands for a dude in blue jeans.
Yes, good old George Allen. With a noose in his office all those years. Wasn't he a good guy? Welcome back. 51 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-440-8466. Our telephone number. I'm hearing several people in the chat room, several callers saying the toll-free numbers to Congress are being shut down or are not working. The main switchboard, David just called, it is working, it does work, is 202. You're going to have to pay for the call unless you have free minutes. 202-225-3121. That's the switchboard for Congress, and just ask for your senator, 202-225-3121. It's the only reliable number. You can find it if you didn't write it down quickly while I was saying it. I'll say it again a little later on. I'll continue to say it throughout the morning or afternoon or evening, whatever it may be when you're listening to this program. But it's also on our homepage at tomhartman.com. Our phone number, 1-866-440-8466. Lena in Tacoma, Washington. Hey, Lena, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hi, Lena. You're on the air. What's up?
I'm sorry. My daughter was talking to me. I'm sorry. You caught me off guard.
That's quite all right. Daughter's
what
a
I want
priority.
To say is, Mr. Hartman, I commend you for your show. I
well,
really do.
You.
This is honestly the first time I've ever heard your show. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
But,
thanks for listening.
I do have three children, so I want to start off by saying I'm a Muslim, Arabic American. Living in the States.
Mm-hmm.
And this is just, it's very appalling. This is appalling, the bill that they're trying to pass. Most of the people, most of the foreigners that have come to seek refuge in the United States have run away from torture, from cruel governments. And my heart was so filled with joy the day that I came here.
Mm.
Because this is the land of the free. This is America. This is America. As a child, I always dreamed of America, coming to America. And this is very sad that it's no longer what I had imagined.
Yeah. Well, Lena, we're trying to take it back. We really are. We're working as hard as we can. And it may take a couple of years. But I really believe that 230 years of history of imperfectly acted out, admittedly, you know, with slavery and women couldn't vote and everything else, imperfectly acted out. But nonetheless, 230 years of talking about holding up as an ideal and believing in the principles of democracy and getting better and better throughout that time. And just the 5 years of craziness under Bush is not going to stand. We are going to wake up from this nightmare.
I really hope so. And what I don't understand is if the government is breaking so many of its own laws, of the Constitution, how I heard on a show or this show that there's a lady that's not wanting to go back to Iraq for fear of sexual harassment.
Suzanne Swift, yeah. She's just now charged this morning with being AWOL.
How on earth can she be charged for disobeying something when the government original law?
Well, this is the huge question, I mean, or the huge issue is that we're saying to the world what basically the way George Bush has lived his life, do as I say, not as I do. You know, I mean, here's a guy who, you know, got busted for cocaine. His daddy got him into a rehab program, got it taken off his records, got busted for drunk driving. They got that taken off his records. He got a new driver's license issued in Texas. They banished everything from his records. I mean, he's always been able to cop a pass. You know, he gets into the best schools because his daddy went there, not because he's got good grades. He hires good people to write his term papers for him. I mean, he's always gotten a pass. His oil company goes broke and Osama bin Laden's half-brother bails him out.
He gets bailed out of it.
Yeah, I mean, he's always got a pass. And that's what our government is behaving like. I mean, what's the old saying? A fish rots from the head down. But this too shall pass. I you know, at the very worst, we have, where's my Bush backwards clock? 844 days, 12 hours, 3 minutes, and 32 seconds before George Bush is required by the Constitution to leave office. And so, you know, this too shall pass, Lena.
I'm going to start a countdown now.
There you go. Don't despair. You know, keep speaking out and thank you for being part of our country and for helping make this country the rich and textured place that it is. Lena, thank you for your call.
Thank you. Thank you.
I appreciate it very much. 1-866-440-8466, George in Covington, Washington. Hey, George.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for the civics lesson every day.
You're welcome.
Since I don't teach it in school anymore.
Yeah, tragically.
I'm a retired service member, 23 years, and one of the things that they taught us from basic training all the way through was you don't torture.
Right.
When you take prisoners, you don't torture.
Yep.
This guy, unlike George Bush, I did serve, you know, and I served in Vietnam and saw some pretty nasty stuff, but it wasn't torture.
Yeah. And when it was renegade.
Crazy.
Yeah, and when it was renegade, it was not sanctioned. I mean, we held Lieutenant Calley to account, you know.
It's, absolutely.
I'm just astounded. Yesterday we had, you know, the story about George Washington when he told one of his generals who was holding 212, as I recall, Hessian prisoners of war. He said, "Treat them well, treat them with humanity, so you know they'll get the message that that's what America stands for." And it is beyond. Beyond astounding, the tragedy that has been wrought in this country by
you mentioned Calley, and once again, you know, they punished the lower end of the chain of command.
Yeah, as a matter of fact,
they never went after Medina or Henderson.
You're right. It should have gone up the chain, and it should now too. You're absolutely right, George. But that's a whole other argument. We need to stop this crazed bill. Check out the New York Times editorial today. We'll be talking about this continuing as we go through the morning or afternoon or evening, whatever it may be, wherever you are. Michael Ratner up next through the Center for Constitutional Rights. 57 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. For a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome back to the radio support group of, by, and for we the people of the United States of America, and we citizens of a planet that we would like to see living in peace and with people having respect for each other. No, this is not wussy. This is actually the strongest position that one can take, that peace and cooperation and harmony is a good and desirable thing among humans. The guys who are running around going, "Oh, we need more war. We need to kick their butts, shoot them," they're the weak ones. They are the cowards. They are the fearful ones, the George W. Bushes of the world. Michael Ratner's with us. He's the director of the Center for Constitutional Rights. The website, ccr-ny.org. Michael, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Michael, the Senate right now is debating. John Warner is speaking at this moment. A few minutes ago, it was Pat Roberts. Republicans basically having a scripted conversation with each other, performing for the cameras. About how, you know, I'm on the side of the CIA and our intelligence professionals, not the terrorists. And I know that's true of my Republican colleagues, but apparently not of the Democrats, that kind of thing. I mean, you know, it's pretty scary. Tell us your take on what's going on right now in the Senate.
Well, what's going on, Wayne? The issue that we've been really focused on, there's a lot. Obviously, it's this Military Commissions Act. The New York Times basically called this thing tyranny coming to America today.
Yes.
It has more provisions than it'll take us the time we have on the radio show.
Yep.
The issue we've been working on heavily, and I just returned from Washington last night, where I've been meeting with senators about something that we lawyers call habeas stripping, which is the removal of the right of habeas corpus from any alien in the United States or held outside the United States. So that if you arrest, detain an alien in the U.S., legal permanent resident, undocumented worker, or somebody outside, and that person is detained and wants to get into a court to say, "Government, why are you detaining me?" They've just taken away that right. That's what this legislation wants to do.
Now, let me just do a little extension of logic here. If the Bush administration, if this law will say that we, the United States, can go anywhere in the world. Let's say that there's somebody in Germany, for example, who's speaking out against us and we don't like them. We can go over and we can kidnap them. We can imprison them.
for the rest of their lives without their ever seeing a judge or ever being charged with a crime. That's what loss of habeas corpus means, right?
That's correct.
You're with me so far?
Yes, you got it exactly.
Okay.
So far.
Now, what we are a part of a body of nations called the United Nations, and we have all these interlocking laws and treaties, and basically, you know, what the people at the highest level of standards do is what pretty much everybody else is held up to. So if we drop down to that level, what's to stop, for example, Germany from saying, okay, Germany, can go anywhere in the world and kidnap anybody we want and hold them forever without a trial, because Americans are sitting around smugly saying, and I've heard Republicans say this, in fact, Gordon Smith's office said this to a caller this morning, well, this only applies to non-citizens, you know. And so Germany says, well, we can go to America and we can arrest Michael Ratner. And,
well,
he'll never have a trial.
You know, you got it exactly. You hit it on the head. I mean, the only difference is that we're the most powerful country in the world, and we'd pound Germany into the Stone Age. I mean, but that's really the only difference. Other than that...
But if every other country started doing it, 20, 30 countries
you'd
started doing
it... You'd have chaos.
Well, and Americans started vanishing, and if in particular, what if...
That's a very good example.
Let's say that actually, instead of Germany, let's say that it was Libya, which is now our ally, and Muammar Gaddafi decides that... And Muammar Gaddafi gets a phone call from, Dick Cheney or Karl Rove, and they say, you know that Michael Ratner guy is a pain in the butt. And I know that you passed a law saying that people don't have habeas corpus in Libya, and so why don't you just kidnap him in New York and hold him in jail for the rest of his life? And Gaddafi comes over and does it, and you think the government's going to protest that?
They'll go crazy. They'll go completely crazy.
I don't think so. I think, you know, if the Bush administration asked Gaddafi to do it, they might just say, I wonder where he went.
You know, that's possible. You know, but it also applies to aliens in the United States. The U.S. decides to want to take an alien in the United States, call the guy an enemy combatant, or say we're processing for it. That's it for the guy. No habeas corpus.
Right, and if we're stripping habeas corpus from aliens, how long is it going to take before they strip it from you and me?
Oh, absolutely. I think this is the reason they were called tyranny, is this is the difference between a country that has authority under law and a police state. That's what this is. And that's what habeas is. It goes back to 1215. And let me tell you how close we lost the vote. I spent 2 days in Washington. I actually almost cried when I heard the vote today. It was 48 votes we got, 51 against us. And we thought we had the votes at the last minute. At the last minute, a couple of senators who we expected, Senator Hagel, a couple of Republicans, Senator Collins from Maine, we lost them because the administration obviously says we're going to kill you guys if you don't vote here. But for us to get 48 votes was remarkable demonstration. We held basically every Democrat except one together, and amazing. And, you know, but on the other hand, we have just lost the most fundamental right that everybody should have.
Okay, illuminate me here, Michael. I thought there was still a debate going on this thing.
Not on this one. What happened is there's the big military commission bill.
Right.
That is on the floor right now as you and I are speaking in the Senate. Right. The Republicans allowed the Democrats to put in five amendments. One of the amendments was to get rid of the court's the stripping of habeas corpus. That vote just occurred 30 minutes ago. We lost it 48 to 51, which means that the removal of habeas corpus from our laws will now be part of this new bill, which will be passed within the next hour or two. And then it'll be signed by the president either tonight or tomorrow morning. And from that point on, a law that the Times compared to the Alien and Sedition Acts will be on the books in this country, saying that if tomorrow the undocumented worker or the lawful permanent resident living next door to you in the United States gets picked up, you never hear from them, it's okay.
Yeah. Or, oh my.
No, your case is great. I mean, I think it's a great way to look at it, to say, what if other laws decided they could do this to you, to non-citizens of their countries?
Right.
And Germany decides tomorrow. You know, in fact, we did it to a German. I mean, so it's a very good analogy. We did it to a guy named Al Mastry.
Yeah.
Al Mastry is living in Germany. We think he's, you know, something. The United States think he's something. They take him off a bus. They put him into some torture center in Afghanistan. Completely innocent guy.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We did it.
We did it. And now we will be able to continue doing it. I didn't realize that the vote had just happened. I mean, it's
just happened, 48 to 51. So, I mean, I think
we have been sold down the tubes by the Republicans.
Yeah, I think, where are you, in Oregon, right?
Yeah, I'm in Oregon.
Well, I think both your senators voted in our favor, but, you know.
Gordon Smith, the Republican?
Well, let me think.
Called his office this morning, and he said he was going to vote in favor of the Republican measure.
Then I'm wrong. Okay, I'm wrong.
Yeah.
Just widen, then.
Yeah. But nobody was willing to filibuster it.
No, that's the other thing you have to understand here. I mean, the Democrats, you know, they in some way you can't really, I mean, I blame them because this is such a fundamental right, but the Republicans purposely put this vote before the elections. And they wanted to show the Democrats, you know, paint the picture of them being, you know, stopping measures to stop terrorism. And you know, I think the Democrats, although a lot of them feel strongly about this, they're afraid of, you know, they think they have a chance, and they're afraid of some of their vulnerable seats if they filibuster this thing. There's still a chance. I mean, they could filibuster in the next hour, but I'm not optimistic about it. I mean, I think they should. This is a close enough issue. This is huge, this issue.
So if there's still a chance and they could filibuster in the next hour, what is it that they could filibuster if they just had a vote 30 minutes ago?
Well,
am I missing here?
They would, the filibuster, it takes two-thirds of, what does it take, two-thirds to close it down?
It takes 60 votes to shut down a filibuster.
So
I understand that, but I mean, what specifically has not yet been voted on that could be filibustered?
Well, there's a couple of, well, no, they could filibuster the bill. The whole bill hasn't been voted on. In other words,
the
bill is on the floor, and they're now doing amendments to the bill.
Right, that was my understanding, was they're debating amendments, and that
right,
this debate could actually last for as much as a day or two.
It won't last that long, but the amendment we lost today was the one on habeas stripping.
Right.
It was part of the legislation on the floor.
But the whole bill itself, the great big bill.
That hasn't been voted on. Absolutely.
Right. And so that could be filibustered, and a filibuster probably would stop it.
It would stop it, and it should be filibustered, and it's probably the only way left to save democracy.
So why can't we find one Democratic senator who will stand up and say, I will filibuster this bill, because I don't think that the Republicans can get 60 votes to pass this.
Right, they can't. I don't think they could. But so far we haven't found that courageous Democrat to do it.
Carl Evans stood up on the floor yesterday and spoke out against this thing.
Yeah, they all. These guys can make very eloquent speeches, but they make eloquent speeches until really, I mean, they acted very well on our court stripping, so I'm not, you know, that critical on that issue, but on the filibuster issue.
So this is like Alito, where they're going to say, I voted against him. I wouldn't filibuster him, but I voted against him.
Right. I think they need to filibuster. This bill, I mean, when you read what's being written about this bill, I mean, we just talked about habeas stripping, but, you know, it allows coercion, evidence from coercion and even torture, you could say, to be...
No, I've got the whole thing. I've got all the provisions of it.
In fact,
we've been going through it in the program here, and thank you for clarifying my... For a moment there, I thought
you were
saying that the whole bill had been passed.
No. We've still got a chance, and if someone can filibuster, this would be incredible.
Yeah, that's really our only hope.
That's our only hope right
now.
Because
trying to get these amendments passed, it's not going to work.
That's correct. It's our only hope right now.
Okay, well, we'll work on it. And Michael Ratner, the Center for Constitutional Rights, ccr-ny.org, his website. Check it out. Help them out. Participate in what they're doing. Participate any way you can. Michael, you're a great guy.
Thank you very much.
Good talking with you. 16 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartmann radio program. Carry on. Onward we go. We'll be right back.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartmann.
Now listen, I watched the news last night on TV. Another scandal up there in D.C. Jack Abramoff, Duke Cunningham, Tom DeLay. Well, there's a new one most every other day. And you got Halliburton camped out in the lobby, making handshake deals behind closed doors. Better do something fast about the price of gas, cause I've been paying for mine and for yours, and I'm taking my country back.
Yes, indeed, my friends, we have to take our country back from these crazies. I mean, they're stripping us of habeas corpus. It's unbelievable. We need to take this country back one congressional district at a time, one state at a time, one county at a time. Patricia Madrid, Attorney General for the state of New Mexico, is currently running for Congress in New Mexico's 1st District. Her website, MadridForCongress, forcongress.com, the website. Patricia Madrid, welcome to the Tom Hartmann program.
Good morning. Great to be with you.
Thank you. Great to have you with us. Tell us what, first of all, the 1st District of New Mexico, who is representing that right now? What is the situation there?
There are three congressional districts in New Mexico. This particular one is congressional City 1. It's being represented by Heather Wilson. She has been in Congress. She's a Republican. She's been there for four terms, 8 years. I am the current sitting Attorney General, and I have been in office 8 years. So it's kind of like the two most powerful women in New Mexico up against each other, and I'm somewhat an incumbent also.
Well, that's
so
great.
So it's a very hard-fought competitive race.
I wish you well. And Patricia Madrid, we have a couple of regular callers from New Mexico who are always complaining about Heather Wilson.
Well, they should be complaining about Heather Wilson. She votes with Bush something like 90% of the time, and that's a good year. And she's with him on all the important questions. She's been with him on the Iraq War all down the line, and she bears particular responsibility because she sat on the House Armed Services Committee and now on the House Intelligence Committee. She's been privy to all these classified information, and she's continuing to be with Bush every step of the way on the war.
We're talking with Patricia Madrid. She's the Attorney General for the state of New Mexico, currently running for Congress in New Mexico's 1st District against Heather Wilson. Patricia Madrid's website, Madrid, M-A-D-R-I-D, 4FORCongress.com. Check it out. If we're going to take this country back, we're going to have to do it one district at a time, one candidate at a time. And even if you don't live in New Mexico, if you're looking for a good candidate to send your campaign contribution to, Patricia Madrid, put her on your list. Here we, Patricia Madrid. Let's go, just in the few minutes we have here. Let's just quickly go through what you consider to be the top issues.
I announced for this race last October, and since that time, I have been talking about the war. I think that is the issue that is on people's minds. You know, they've just been consistently upset about how we got into the war. The misrepresentations, and I might add that Heather Wilson, again, she sits on the House Intelligence Committee. She's been right there. She knew that the intelligence, that the aluminum tubes, that wasn't, we didn't support weapons of mass.
She knew it was phony.
And our own scientists here at Sandia told her so, and she still voted for the war. So, as I said, she's right in the middle of it. She continues to support this president. And now she is the one that is presenting the warrantless wiretapping bill. They're allowing her to carry that to look strong on national security. And, of course, she's just doing that at the behest of the president. The president did come into New Mexico and raise her $375,000 in one day. And then she promptly went on television buying ads that said that she was independent of him. Carl Rove is coming into this district on Saturday. He has a very special interest in this race. And, you know, they're doing what they're doing around the country. They're spending 90% of their media budget on negative advertising. So it's a difficult race, but I'm still, you know, we're neck to neck. We're polling very even with about 9% undecided. So this is the race to look at in the country.
Great. Madrid for Congress, M-A-D-R-I-D, spelled just like it sounds, Madrid for FORCongress.com, the website. People can contribute to your campaign and learn more about Patricia Madrid. She's the Attorney General of the state of New Mexico running for Congress against Heather Wilson. Patricia Madrid, we have about a half a minute or so left. Your take on health care. This is one of the top issues for most Americans.
Well, I've been talking about Medicare D from the beginning of this race because it affects our senior citizens here in New Mexico. So far, we live in a state of 1.8 million people. 45,000 of our senior citizens who are eligible have not signed up because it was too confusing. Thousands are now reaching the donut hole. They're going to find out what a scam this program really is. This is a piece of legislation that passed by one vote. Heather Wilson voted with the pharmaceutical companies and the HMOs against the senior citizens, and then has the nerve to go on television bragging about, you know, this program. I think senior citizens know better, and that when the Democrats take over the House, we're going to completely overhaul this program so that it really serves senior citizen population.
Amen. Amen. Patricia Madrid, MadridForCongress.com, the website. Check it out. Patricia Madrid, thank you for being with us in the program today.
Thank you very much.
And best of luck in your race. 27 minutes past the hour.
bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
I'm the decider, and I decide what is best. I'm the decider.
I figured that it couldn't be too difficult.
So I hear the voices.
To be president of the USA.
I read the front page, and I know the speculation.
I saw my dad do it. How hard could it be? Then the office finally came to me. Now I'm in control. I'm the decider.
But I'm the decider.
That's my role. Not a doubt in my mind.
I'm the person who gets to decide, not you.
I'm always right. I'm the decider. I don't do all-nighters. That's not me.
That's how I work. I'm the decider.
People seem to think that it takes brains and stuff.
I don't know why you say that.
But hey, nuclear physics, this is not.
I don't mean to be dodging the question, although it's kind of convenient in this case.
Anyone could do it. Harry, Dick, or Tom. The hardest part's deciding where to bomb.
I hope we're not headed to war in Iraq.
But that's my job.
That's how I work.
I'm the decider.
He's the decider. Welcome back. The place where being progressive never felt so good. The Tom Hartman radio program. And, I'm not making that up.
I'm not making this up.
No, I'm not. I'm really not. I'm not. This is this detainee bill. And thank goodness that Michael Ratner straightened me out on this. The whole bill itself, there have been a series of amendments, and that's what everybody's fighting over right now. They're on the floor of the Senate. In fact, I was just listening to the debate between Pat Roberts and Carl Levin. Carl Levin came to the floor, and he was talking about this was an amendment that would require the CIA to make a quarterly report on what they're up to, basically, and if they're violating human rights or if they're violating habeas corpus. And Carl Levin is like, and Pat Roberts says, well, we don't want these guys doing nothing but bookkeeping. We want a report. All we have to do is ask them for it. And Carl Levin says, did I hear that right? Here's Carl Levin.
4 minutes to the senator from Michigan.
Senator from Michigan is recognized for 4 minutes.
Thank the chair, and I thank my friend from West Virginia. Mr. President, this amendment just simply requires regular reports on detention and interrogation programs. It will give us access to legal opinions. It's essential that this amendment be adopted. And I just want to ask my good friend from West Virginia if he heard the chairman of the Intelligence Committee say that all we have to do is ask for reports and we'll get them. Did I hear that right?
The senator of Michigan heard that correctly.
Well, Mr. President, just one example here. I've been trying to get a memo called the Second Bybee Memo now for 2.5 years. I haven't asked once. I haven't asked twice. I've probably asked a dozen times for the Bybee Memo. And my good friend, the chairman of the Armed Services Committee, has asked for the Bybee Memo without any luck. So the idea that all we have to do is ask is just simply wrong. Chairman Warner asked on May 13, 2004, for all legal reviews and related documentation concerning approval of interrogation techniques he provided to the committee. It's never been provided. April 12, 2005, I submit questions to John Negroponte, who is the nominee for Director of National Intelligence, requesting to see if the intelligence community has copies of the so-called Second Bybee Memo. And in April 2005, I asked General Hayden on his nomination to be Deputy National Intelligence Director to see if he could determine if the intelligence community has a copy of the Second Bybee Memo and to provide it to the committee. And then on the intelligence budget hearing, April 28, 2005, I asked...
And he just goes through this thing. If you're...
Secretary Cambone, can you get us a copy of the second...
And then he just continues. He goes through this list of all these people that he asked, would you please get this? And none of them ever answered. All these people in the administration. It was all a big, give you the bird kind of thing, And now this is just an amendment to this giant piece of legislation that is going to basically turn the United States into a police state. And that's what we need to be calling Congress and saying, we need to find a Democrat who will filibuster this thing. The entire bill. Forget about the amendments. The entire bill needs to be filibustered. The New York Times today, I mean, just comes right out and says it. I mean, unambiguously. This is a toxic piece of legislation. I mean, that's not what they said. Words close to that. I have somehow managed to have lost. Ah, here it is right here. They say the Bush administration uses, right from the get-go. Here's what happens when this irresponsible Congress railroads a profoundly important bill to serve the mindless politics of a midterm election. The Bush administration uses Republicans' fear of losing their majority to push through ghastly ideas about anti-terrorism that will make American troops less safe and do lasting damage to our 217-year-old nation of laws while actually doing nothing to protect the nation from terrorists. Democrats betray their principles to avoid last-minute attack ads. Our democracy is the big loser. Republicans say Congress must act right now to create procedures for charging and trying terrorists because the men accused of plotting the 9/11 attacks are available for trial. That's pure propaganda. I'm quoting the New York Times here. That's pure propaganda. Those men could have been tried and convicted long ago, but President Bush chose not to. They go on to say it serves a cynical goal. Republican strategists think they can win this fall, not by passing a good law, but by forcing Democrats to vote against a bad one so they can be made to look soft on terrorism. See, the Democrats have been convinced that if they filibuster this bill, then that's going to cause the Republicans to win the election in the fall. It's a no-win situation. What do you want, America or to get reelected? So that you can defend America. This is absolutely tragic. Andrew in Hershey, Pennsylvania. Hey, Andrew.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. I've been listening to you for over a year now. It's the first time I've called. It's just because I'm so irate over this whole situation. Let me just say...
Did you call Senator Spector?
Yes, I did. I called Senator Spector and Santorum. My question for Santorum was, who would Jesus torture?
And what was the answer?
Silence on the other end.
Yeah.
But I wanted to make 2 points. One was when you were talking with Mr. Ratner from the Center for Constitutional Rights, you were saying, you know, the next step is to take habeas away in the United States in our domestic court system.
Yeah.
And you may be aware there is actually a bill to practically do just that called the Streamlined Procedures Act. This bill would make it almost impossible for state prisoners to access the federal courts and challenge and say that their federal rights are their constitutional
rights. Right. This is the one that is being promoted by right-wingers saying that they're trying to stop prisoners from abusing process by filing endless petitions and legal challenges to their detention.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And I think the Washington Post said it best when they editorialized on this. They said that Congress has a novel approach to the problem of innocent people on death row. They don't want the cases ever to even see the light of day.
Yeah.
The other thing I wanted to ask you about is the Democrats, and you know, why don't they just get more direct about the Republicans and just say, look, these guys are un-American freedom haters. I mean, they
absolutely should, because that's what's going on.
Exactly.
They're behaving like Nazis. I mean, the Republicans are behaving like Nazis, and Karl Rove is behaving like Niccolo Machiavelli. And why the Democrats? Well, actually, I do know why the Democrats aren't saying it. Probably some of them are. The fact of the matter is that if they were to say that, it wouldn't get reported. Or if it was reported, it would be reported as Democrats have gotten hysterical.
Well, yeah, I know. I've thought about that too.
I mean, it's incredible. You get George W. Bush wagging his finger at reporters and yelling and screaming and throwing temper tantrums in his press conferences, and it's just like reported, like, well, this is just what it is. Bill Clinton slaps down Chris Wallace in a perfectly rational fashion with actual facts, and the actual facts never get reported. Instead,
right, exactly.
Bill Clinton is president's gone wild, and so I mean, we've got a media that is enabling the Republicans to behave like fascists, and then you've got the Democrats who realize that they're in a no-win situation. And the only thing that's going to bail these guys out, the Democratic men and women who could have the capacity and the ability to stand up, is if we mobilize ourselves. You get it? I mean, as Roy from New Mexico once brilliantly said, What politicians are all about is they're not about creating parades. They're waiting for a whole bunch of us to get out there and be the, you know, form a parade going down the street and say, this is what we're all about. We really care about this. And then a politician will jump out in front and lift a flag and say, ah, this is my parade. And that's actually the way it's supposed to be, because we elect representatives, not leaders in the United States of America. Sam in Canandaigua, New York.
Hi.
Hey, Sam, we only have just about a minute before we take a break. You called Senator Clinton's office. What happened?
Yeah, well, I asked how she intended to vote on this, and I was told that they could not tell me how she would vote. She has stated before that she would hope that we treat detainees the way that our soldiers would be treated if captured. And she also, I was also told by her staff members that they couldn't tell me whether she would support a filibuster or not. So,
well, let's you know, the particularly residents of New York, but as Hillary Clinton aspires to national office, let's all, you know, call her office as well. The toll-free number, or not, forget the toll-free numbers. The number for the Capitol Hill switchboard is 202-225-3121.
Well, I got to tell you, Tom, this whole thing is just despicable. It's disgusting.
It is. Sam, I'm right there with you. It is beyond despicable. It is anti-American. It is treasonous what these Republicans are doing. And those of you who have been listening to this program for the last 4 years know that I am not one prone to hyperbole. This is treason. 45 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Whatever's wrong with this whole world of Clinton, it's too tame-o. It's Bill Clinton's fault. It's Bill Clinton's fault. That's murder or assault. Bill Clinton is too tame-o.
Bill Clinton is too tame-o.
Yes, the old Republican mantra. Well, welcome back. 9.5 minutes before the hour. Truth and common sense in broadcasting for a change. Right at this moment, Hillary Rodham Clinton on the floor of the Senate speaking. She's talking about how George Washington took prisoners during the Revolutionary War. And I listened to her right up until we came back on the air, and I'm guessing that she is going to be quoting from Washington's Crossings by David Hackett Fisher or some variation on that, where Washington often reminded his men that they were an army of liberty and freedom, and that the rights of humanity for which they were fighting should extend even to our enemies. To another officer with 221 Hessian prisoners of war, Washington said, George Washington said, "Treat them with humanity and let them have no reason to complain of our copying the brutal example of the British Army in their treatment of our unfortunate brethren." Pretty straightforward. In fact, I'll be playing the clip of Hillary Clinton talking about this. We'll find out where she ends up with all this. But she has about 5 minutes to speak, and it's still going on. I'm recording it as we speak. I'll listen to it at the top of the hour, and we'll play part of it in the next hour of the program. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. I'm sorry, say that again. Oh, Victoria Jones, the Talk Radio News Service, is on the line with us. Hey, Victoria.
Well, hey, Tom. Yes, indeed. Very interesting times. Very interesting times indeed. Meantime, as I'm sure you're aware, Bob Woodward has a new book coming out in which he seems to have developed a spine, actually, in this book, State of Denial. Because,
yeah, he's uncovering the crimes of the or the cover-ups, actually, of the Bush administration. I mean,
cover-ups, which others have certainly talked about, but it's only when Bob Woodward gets to them that they seem to gain the kind of mass appeal and credibility that will draw the attention of the masses to them. That was put rather badly, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, here's this 60 Minutes, we'll say. According to Woodward, insurgent attacks against coalition troops occur on average every 15 minutes, a shocking fact the administration has kept secret.
Quite extraordinary.
Bob Woodward says it's getting to the point where there are now 800 to 900 attacks a week. That's more than 100 a day. That's 4 an hour attacking our forces. And then the intelligence shows that it's going to get worse. The situation is getting much worse, says Woodward. I'm quoting 60 Minutes now. Despite what the White House and the Pentagon are saying in public, and then quoting Woodward, Bob Woodward says to Mike Wallace, the truth is that the assessment by intelligence experts is that next year, 2007, is going to get worse. And in public, you have the president and the Pentagon saying, oh, no, things are getting better. Now, there's public and then there's private. But what did they do with the private? They stamp it secret. No one's supposed to know. This is, says Woodward. But you know, a bigger concern right now in my mind, Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News, is this Senate Bill 3930 that is being debated on the floor of the Senate right now, that the New York Times said today is this generation's equivalent of the Alien and Sedition Acts.
And this bill is likely to go through.
Why is it impossible to find a Democrat to stand up and filibuster this thing?
Because the Democrats are afraid that if they do that, that Democrats will be portrayed in the upcoming elections, which are very close, as being weak as water in the fight on terrorism. And that's exactly what happened to them in the House. They were afraid, and so they rolled over, and they actually voted for the bill, a bill which they didn't agree with, didn't approve of, but they were afraid of what was going to happen to them in a short-term election.
Oh, and this is what happened in 2002 with regard to the Patriot Act and the creation of the Department of Homeland Security.
Exactly. And so they're doing it yet again.
So Karl Rove is playing his playbook again, and the Democrats haven't come up with a comeback. But still, isn't there a senator who's in a really safe seat? I mean, isn't there a senator who isn't up for re-election for at least another 4 years and who's willing to step up? Or are they being told by other Democrats, if you do that, we're not going to be here with you?
Well, this is where I don't know the answer to that, and I wish I did. Because you really would think that there would be somebody. What's happened to Russ Feingold?
I was just thinking of Russ Feingold. I mean, you know, why is he not stepping up and speaking out? Or Barbara Boxer. I mean, she's I think, frankly, relatively safe.
He's in a safe seat.
Yeah, and some suggest they both have presidential aspirations. Here's an opportunity for them to assert some leadership. But I think that it's like they're all taking advice from Bob Schrum or something. Is he still advising these people?
I don't believe he's got very much power at the moment.
Thank God. I mean, you know, he's only lost 8 elections for the
Democrats.
I
don't think he's got very much power at the moment. And I don't think he has that much power over someone like a Feingold anyway, who seems to write his own playbook.
Yeah.
I really quite simply don't understand it. It'll be interesting after it goes down to find out what the reasons were. And if they were as simple and as pathetic as that they don't want to be seen as the party that's weak on terrorism, because that's been their feeble excuse before, and it's backfired on them.
Yeah.
And they haven't learned from that.
We've got the board is slammed with callers here who want to share some of their experiences. Let's just take a couple in the 50 seconds we have left. Akvar in Flemington, New Jersey.
Hey, Tom.
Akvar. Yeah.
I know you're great, but I'm sure you'll get better.
Thank you. You called Senator Menendez.
I sure did. And it was during your 1 o'clock news break.
Mm-hmm.
And I probably jumped real hard down the staffer's throat when he told me that the senator hadn't formed a position yet. Menendez is the one who replaced Corzine.
Right.
Back earlier this year, he's in a real tight race with Tom Keene's son.
Yeah.
But I told him this is a time for principles. You know, what difference does it make if you give it for principles to win the race?
Yeah. Well said, Victoria. Your thoughts? I mean, this guy took an oath of office to defend the Constitution. We're talking about a bill here that's going to do away with the Fourth through the Eighth Amendments.
He's afraid that if he stands by that principle, he'll be portrayed as being weak in a state that needs to be tough.
Man, it is so sad that we have devolved into a soundbite society. You know, it is so sad. Victoria Jones, the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Victoria, thanks for being with us today. Carry on. We'll be back after the news. More of your calls, and I'll have this clip of Hillary to share with you, and we'll just see how this thing is going in the Senate, and we'll keep calling, you keep calling, we'll keep talking about what we can do here. Hopefully we can find a senator who will stand up and have some spine, and the other Democrats in the Senate will stand up and have some spine and back down these Republicans. 57 minutes past the hour.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
So what's really at stake here? Hillary Clinton just gave a great speech on the floor of the Senate. Unfortunately, she didn't end it by saying, therefore, I am putting a hold on this bill and initiating a filibuster. But I will share a bit of that with you in a few minutes. First, if I'm pronouncing this right, Jumana Musa?
That's absolutely correct.
Great. Jumana Musa, who is the Advocacy Director for International Justice and Basic Human Rights at AmnestyUSA.org, which is the United States division of Amnesty International, if I'm correct.
Yep, more of the U.S. section.
Yeah. So, Jumana Musa, what's your take on what's going on in the Senate right now?
I mean, I think we're extremely concerned because they're pushing very hard and very fast to pass legislation that's extremely far-reaching and impacts so many different areas of the law. From our perspective, it's ill-advised, and it's not going to result in the kind of clarity and fixes that we're told it's meant to create, essentially. It's going to cause more problems than it is solutions.
This is essentially a work of politics, not a work of law, in my opinion. And that's essentially what the New York Times is saying today, is that this is a Karl Rove strategy. This is a 2002 election strategy being replayed in 2006. So this is the same thing that the Republicans did with the Patriot Act and the Homeland Security Bill, pushing through some lousy legislation that really doesn't fix anything, that really should be well thought out and carefully considered so that they can force the Democrats to vote for it and get their way, or if they vote against it, beat them up and throw them out of office.
Well, and I think the real problem here, and if you look at the way this is being pushed, as if we didn't pass this legislation, somehow Khalid Sheikh Mohammed would be let out of prison tomorrow or never tried. I mean, if you look at what the chief prosecutor of the Office of Military Commissions has said, they're not actually going to prosecute him for some time. It's going to take time to build a case, so it's not as though if they don't have this, he's going to be sitting in prison waiting for his trial to start. His trial's not starting anyway right now.
Right.
He actually doesn't have any rights, according to the legislation passed in December. He has no right to go to court and file a writ of habeas corpus. So this really isn't about Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, although it's very much being painted that way.
Yeah, in fact, Hillary Clinton, I think I'm in the right place in the clip here, just said essentially the same thing.
They are in prison.
Oh, yeah, here, let me just back it up just a little bit.
We must hold on to our values and set an example that we can point to with pride, not shame. Those captured are going nowhere. They are imprisoned now.
And that's the essence of what you're saying.
Oh, no question. And I think, but even more than that, they're not getting tried tomorrow. At best, if they move forward with military commission proceedings, it's going to be the 10 folks that they've already charged, most of whom are charged with not even doing anything directly. So they're not talking about, we can't try the big fish if you don't pass this at this very second. They're talking about, we can't get around to probably in February the trial of these lower level or insignificant people.
Right. So, Jumana Musa, is Amnesty International's USA branch, or Amnesty USA, AmnestyUSA.org, are you folks lobbying the Senate for a filibuster of this bill? Because it's apparently going to take a filibuster for Senate Bill 3930 to be blown up, basically.
I mean, our members have been calling and faxing and writing letters, visiting their district offices, saying that this bill can't pass. You know, ultimately, we don't run Congress. But there are enough severe human rights concerns and humanitarian law concerns in this bill that we've had our membership fully mobilized. We know that we've sent over 50,000-60,000 letters. We've had thousands of phone calls that have gone. Yet at this point, obviously, things are still moving ahead. We're extremely concerned.
Yeah. Do you see any Democrats who might be amenable to the pressure of their constituents of phone calls to filibuster this legislation?
Well, I mean, I think the difficulty is not whether or not a Democrat is willing to filibuster, but whether or not there's even enough votes to sustain a filibuster. I mean, that's an entirely different question. And so, you know, when it comes to...
That only takes 40 votes.
But I don't know that they have 40 votes, do you? I mean,
no,
I think
I have
that's
no
part
idea.
Of the problem. I don't either.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's so many calculations that go into something like that. So I can't really speak to sort of Democratic Party strategy because that's clearly not where we come from as
sure.
an organization.
Yeah, I understand. You're not a partisan organization.
No.
So the bottom line is basically Amnesty International, Amnesty USA is simply saying this is a bad bill. Don't pass it.
Absolutely. No question. Okay. And I think, you know, what people need to focus on here, because they've told, you know, some, they've really tried to shape this in terms of the 14 people who they've had in custody for years, some of them. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed has been in custody for years, that they just sort of popped up out of the secret facilities that they would neither confirm nor deny up until September 6, 2006, put them in Guantanamo and said, now if you don't pass this legislation, we can't try these people, we can't do anything. But if you look at the legislation, it allows for anybody to be cleared an unlawful enemy combatant, U.S. citizens. It doesn't say, you know, any of it says any individual can be declared an unlawful enemy combatant based on these things, which, you know, has a lot of leeway for the executive to decide who that is.
Even U.S. citizens.
Oh, it doesn't specify. It says any individual. And the point is, if you look at the way things have progressed in terms of legal rulings, you know, Jose Padilla actually had challenged his status as an enemy combatant in the U.S. and went to the Fourth Circuit, and the Fourth Circuit said, actually, we think this is okay.
And
after that, he was taken out of the system, put into federal court, and so that stands. It's good law right now in the Fourth Circuit.
Right, he was, and he's a U.S. citizen.
He absolutely is. Who was picked up in O'Hare Airport, not on a battlefield, not, you know, not pointing a gun at U.S. soldiers, but in O'Hare Airport.
Right.
And that should be a concern to anybody.
The New York Times today says this bill would repudiate a half century of international precedent by allowing Mr. Bush to decide on his own what abusive interrogation methods he considered permissible, and his decision could stay secret. There's no requirement that this list be public. This published with regard to the Geneva Conventions.
Yeah, I think what's problematic is that's essentially how the president's been operating, and I think now we'll have the sort of perspective of operating that way with congressional, blessing.
Approval. Yeah. So, to a large extent, this is a ratification or a get out of jail free card kind of thing for Bush, as opposed to any new policy. This is essentially a ratification of existing policy.
Well, I mean, I think we do need to parse out some things that happened this year that were very good, including the fact that when the Department of Defense saw the decision in the Hamdan case, they issued a clear directive that said we will comply fully with Common Article 3 of the Geneva Conventions. They issued a new field manual, which has some concerns, but has largely gone through and stood strong to say all of these tactics, including things like waterboarding, which they mentioned by name, sleep deprivation, hot and cold treatments, all these things are strictly prohibited. And so there's certainly been progress in some areas. However, you know, what we look at what the administration has done and essentially tried to argue to keep these, as they call them, alternative interrogation techniques, valid and useful for the CIA, and to really keep the ability to do secret prisons. And I think what's really stunning about that is if you look at sort of presidential interpretation of international law and treaties, he stood on television on September 6th and said, you know, yes, we've held these people, and we've done it all in accordance with our obligations under the law and treaties. But at the same time, the UN committees that actually adjudicate compliance with international treaties, both the Committee Against Torture that looks at the Convention Against Torture and the Human Rights Committee that looks at the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, has stated quite clearly that secret detentions are violations of the treaty obligations. So it seems that, you know, presidential interpretation of treaties lives in a sort of netherworld, really, aside from what do the treaties say and how does everybody else interpret them.
So there's the real world, there's the international community, and then there's Bushland.
In essence, he has some pretty creative lawyers on his staff, as we've seen in the past.
Yeah. Habeas corpus, the New York Times. Detainees in U.S. military prisons would lose the basic right to challenge their imprisonment. These cases do not clog the courts nor coddle terrorists. They simply give wrongly imprisoned people a chance to prove their innocence.
Well, that's been the point of habeas from the very beginning. And, you know, some people would want to paint it as, you know, just thousands of petitions of people saying, I want my crunchy peanut butter. But the reality of the situation, there's about 200 habeas cases that are out of Guantanamo, none from anywhere else, you know, that are affiliated with a U.S. detention facility, maybe one or two others, you know, around the world. You have one guy who's a lawful permanent resident who is being held as an enemy combatant who has a case, and that's it. You know, this is not millions of cases that have flooded the court and sort of brought the federal court system to a halt. But again, you know, we're being told that really this is just tons of cases that are arguing for I want a softer mattress, when the reality of the situation is some of these people are saying, I shouldn't be here. And all habeas does is give someone the opportunity to go to court and say, you need to show why it's valid to hold me. It's an important restriction.
Coerced evidence will be permissible if the judge says it's relevant.
Well, this is where it gets extremely problematic when you look at sort of creative interpretations and descriptions. Because if you look at the bill as well, they also distinguish between before the passage of the Detainee Treatment Act and after. Before the passage of the Detainee Treatment Act, the Bush administration's position was that
the prohibition on cruel and human degrading treatment simply didn't apply overseas. And they also had such a narrow definition of torture that it was almost impossible to commit torture.
So this kind of reverse ratifies that. We're
in many ways. It called the coercive and says we can use that evidence.
You can read all about it over at amnestyusa.org. Jumana Musa, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Good speaking with you. 16 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartmann radio program.
This is the Tom Hartmann Program.
There's something wrong with the world today. I don't know what it is. Something's wrong with our eyes. We're seeing things in a different way. God knows it ain't his. It sure ain't no surprise. We're living on the edge.
Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. Tom Hartmann here with you, 21 minutes past the hour. Hillary Clinton on the floor of the Senate. Everybody, an opportunity for good words. Good words.
When General Washington led his soldiers across the Delaware River and onto victory in the Battle of Trenton, he captured nearly 1,000 foreign mercenaries, and he faced a crucial choice. How would General Washington treat these prisoners? The British had already committed atrocities against Americans, including torture. As David Hackett Fisher describes in his Pulitzer Prize-winning book, Washington's Crossing, thousands of American prisoners of war were treated with extreme cruelty by British captors. There are accounts of injured soldiers who surrendered being murdered instead of quartered. Countless Americans dying in prison hulks in New York Harbor. Starvation and other acts of inhumanity perpetrated against Americans confined to churches in New York City. Well, you can imagine, the light of our ideals shone dimly in those early dark days, years from an end to the conflict, years before our improbable triumph and the birth of our democracy. General Washington announced a decision unique in human history, sending the following order for handling prisoners. Treat them with humanity and let them have no reason to complain of our copying the brutal example of the British Army in their treatment of our unfortunate brethren.
Hillary Clinton uses our quote for the day from yesterday. Today, on the floor of the United States Senate, she continues.
George Washington understood that how you treat enemy combatants can reverberate around the world. We must convict and punish the guilty in a way that reinforces their guilt before the world and does not undermine our values.
That's very well said. And her, she continues on, runs about 5 minutes, 6 minutes here, talking in similar tones. You know, we have to hold ourselves to high ideals. But she doesn't. At the very end, say, therefore, I'm putting a hold on this thing, or I'm going to filibuster this, or whatever. Joyce in Northampton, Massachusetts, on the line. Hey, Joyce, thanks for calling. What's up?
Well, first of all, I just want to say I absolutely love your show. I listen to it whenever I can. It's on during work hours, so I can't always listen, but I always do when I can. You're fabulous. You're my hero. I just called both Senator Kennedy's and Senator Kerry's offices. And I heard something very disturbing from Senator Kerry's office. The staff person said that there will be no cloture vote, and therefore there cannot be a filibuster. And I said, are you sure? What is this? How did this happen? And he said he didn't know that perhaps they traded the cloture vote for some amendments, but there will be no cloture vote, and therefore there cannot be a filibuster. Has anyone else reported this?
Yes.
To you?
Somebody, yes, another person had called spoken with Yeah, I heard something similar to that this morning, earlier today, but it doesn't make sense to me. Of course, I'm not a senator, and I don't know all the Senate rules, but my understanding was that any senator can put a hold on a bill, basically, and say, this is it, we're going to hold this thing, and if they've got 40 votes, they can hold it.
All right, this gentleman in Senator Kerry's office who spoke with me said that you can only have a filibuster if there is a cloture vote, if a cloture vote is allowable, which, you know, ends debate.
Right.
And since there is no cloture vote allowable, therefore there cannot be a filibuster.
So how are they going to end debate?
I guess just civilly. And I said, you mean our Constitution is basically going to go up in flames and there's nothing that can be done about it? And he said, that's right.
Oh, man. Well, we've got to learn a little more about this. I'm going to once again try and get through to my senator's office during the break here at the bottom of the hour and find out about this. Let's hope that the information you got was wrong.
I that's what I'm hoping. I called Senator Kennedy's office immediately afterward. They were singularly unhelpful. They did say that they are receiving hundreds of calls, which I thought was nice, good news. And he didn't know. I asked if Senator Kennedy would support a filibuster, and he said he had no information about that. And I asked him if he knew anything about this cloture vote, and he said he had no information about that.
Yeah.
But the staff person in Senator Kerry's office was very explicit.
There had been some horse trading at some point. Well, they did have all these amendments come forward. By the way, one of the amendments just got shot down. In fact, it's a terrible thing. I'll fill you in on that when we come right back from this. Thanks for the call, Joyce. We're going to do our progressive pop quiz right now. Our question for the day: who was the first U.S. president who ordered his soldiers to treat captives well? The sixth caller. 1-866-440-8466 gets a copy of Screwed. 27 minutes past the hour.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Take a deep breath. Feel like you're joking.
Well, not everything. It's looking like that some days, but no, not everything. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Talk radio for the rest of us. Congratulations to Kate McGuire from Arcata, California. There you go. Kate knew that the answer to the question, who was the first U.S. president to order his soldiers to treat his captives well, was George Washington. And Kate wins a copy of my new book, Screwed, The Undeclared War Against the Middle Class and What We Can Do About It, which I will, by the way, be signing in Los Angeles this weekend on Saturday, September 30th at 4 p.m. at Roman's Bookstore in Pasadena and at 8 p.m. at the Bodhi Tree in Hollywood on Melrose Avenue. So for those of you in the L.A. area. And thus our progressive pop quiz. I just spoke with a fellow in one of my senator's office. I called Ron Wyden's office and asked, you know, what's the deal here with invoking cloture, and is this possible, and all that. Jeff is going to call me back and let us know. So we will find out, and I think we'll get a straight story from them. We tend to usually get straight stories from Senator Ron Wyden's office. In fact, right now he's filibustering the net neutrality thing. I mean, the attempt to overturn net neutrality by the Republicans, Ron Wyden is. So I know that they know that it can be done, and how we'll find out what the situation is with regard to this. Lauren tells me also that several callers have suggested that Paul Sarbanes in Maryland and Mark Dayton in Minnesota are senators who are going to be retiring this year, Democrats, and therefore might be willing to put their political neck on the line and offer a filibuster or put a hold on the bill, or somehow work to block the bill. Question is whether there would be 40 Democrats, you know, 39 other Democrats who would be willing to join them in stopping this toxic piece of legislation. So anyhow, we'll find out as time goes on. 1-866-440-8466 is our telephone number. And Sean in Sacramento, California. Hey, Sean.
Hey, Tom. How's it going?
Good. What's up?
Oh, I tell you, it's really sad what's happening to our country. And speaking as a Christian, I think that it's really abhorrent what we're doing, because the Bible is quite clear on this subject. Paul basically says in the Gospels that, or not in the Gospels, but through the Bible,
epistles,
that you should give your enemy cold water, and this will be the equivalent of pouring hot coals on his head. I mean, the message is clear. You know, you treat them with kindness, and basically, you know, you destroy a lot of their misgivings about you and their beliefs about you.
Yeah.
And the thing is, that really breaks my heart, is that when you look at our Lord, basically, he was tormented. His captors did terrible things to him, and, you know, the last thing, you know, basically one of the last few things he says is, forgive them, Father, for they know not what they do.
Yeah. And yet at the same time, it seems, Sean, that I'm seeing, and in our religion, a revival of an almost sadomasochistic culture. You know, this movie that Mel Gibson made, the whole celebration of violence in Christianity. George Bush invoking Christianity, General Boykin saying, you know, our God is bigger than their God, all this kind of stuff. It seems like it's not just a few politicians in Washington, D.C. that have gone off the rails. You got Pat Robertson out there calling for the assassination of other human beings.
Yeah, and like I said, it's you know, the thing is that people who apparently want to turn this nation back to Christ have a lot of work to do.
Yeah.
And that's the point, because, I mean, yeah, they're so far off the mark, it isn't funny.
Yeah, well said. And a lot of work to do to bring themselves back to something reasonable about this. 1-866-440-8466. Casey in Seattle. Hey, Casey.
Hey, Tom. I just wanted to call real quick and say that I also spoke to the same guy at Senator Kerry's office,
mm-hmm,
like, earlier during the day. And so he said, because I was about ready to, like, cry, and so I just kept asking him questions, and he said if we can get 6 Republican senators to vote no, then, because he said the same thing, like, you couldn't do a filibuster. I'm kind of new to politics, so I don't really understand that.
Yeah.
But he said that if there were 6 Republican senators that voted no, then it wouldn't pass. So I've been just calling and calling and calling, you know, as many as I can, and, like, Senator Graham's office, and just asking, like, but why would they vote for this? Like, it doesn't even make any sense, like, no matter which side you're on.
Right. Well, and the thing that really baffles me about the you can't filibuster it is that the New York Times today, in their editorial, let me just read this.
Mm-hmm.
It says, there's not enough time to fix these bills, especially since the few Republicans who call themselves moderates have been whipped into line, and the Democratic leadership in the Senate seems to have misplaced its spine. If ever there was a moment for a filibuster, this is it.
I asked, I said, if it's not going to, you know, when would you filibuster something? I'm like, and I was even asking the people that answered the phones. I'm like, I mean, come on, the whole time during school, elementary school, like, that's all we got bombarded with. It's like the Constitution, like, doesn't it seem insane to you?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Hopefully if people call.
Indeed. Okay. Thank you very much, Casey. I appreciate it. Good
yes,
to hear from
I was going to say, it's still a chance.
Indeed. Okay.
Thanks.
Well, you know, keep hope alive, to paraphrase Jesse Jackson. Ted in Sacramento, California. Hey, Ted.
Yes. If the Democrats don't filibuster, and they can, this bill will pass, and they will be complicit in its passage. They might as well have voted yes.
I know. It was the same thing with Alito.
And secondly, the Constitution, Section 9, the privilege of the writ of habeas corpus shall not be suspended unless when in cases of rebellion, and there's no rebellion, or invasion, and there's no invasion, the public safety may require it. And this Constitution applies to persons. For instance, Amendment 5, no person shall be held to answer for a capital murder, et cetera.
And the Bill of Rights, and in fact, the Supreme Court has construed the word persons in the Bill of Rights to mean persons regardless of citizenship status.
Yes, the Congress has no right to abolish habeas corpus. That requires a constitutional amendment.
Exactly. And then what we would be doing is we would be rolling back law that was started in 1215. I mean, the year 1215, this is when habeas corpus began. Ted, thank you. It's a, you know, well said. And this is crazy. Susan in Redmond, Washington. Hey, Susan.
Hey there, Tom. First-time caller.
Thank you.
I love your show.
Thank you.
Thanks. I also called my senator's office, Senator Patty McMurray's office, and I spoke with a gentleman there who told me that there was a deal that was made between the Democrats and the senators that they were going to have these four amendments voted on in order for them not to filibuster, and two of which we know have failed.
Right.
Have not. Yeah. So anyway, so I just got confirmation.
And the Specter amendment just failed as well. The Specter amendment number 5087 to strike the provision regarding habeas corpus review.
Okay. So then that's number three.
I don't know if it's number two or number three. I know that failed in the last hour.
And so I said, is there anything else? Is there anything else that can happen? Is there anything else that can get this filibuster through? And he said, nope. You just got to vote in November. That's all you can do. So it's a really sad day. It's a sad day for democracy.
Well, or we can find, as the last caller said, if we can find six Republicans who will vote against their party. Are there six Republicans out there who have the courage of their convictions, who actually believe in the United States and in the great history of this country? And, if there aren't, then the Republican Party is toast.
Yeah, I mean, agree.
They may even win the next election. I mean, this is a very powerful political thing, the game that Karl Rove is playing. But he is playing with dynamite. They are playing with stuff that could explode in their faces. They are playing with the future of this country. And I don't frankly think that the people of the United States, when this history gets written, when all is said and done, when the real stories get laid out, I do not think that the people of the United States are going to stand for this.
I agree with you. I agree with you 100%.
I think the Republican Party is cutting their own throat by going down this road with George W. Bush.
Well, you mentioned a couple of senators earlier, and I missed their names. A caller was writing them down that are Republican senators. She's going to contact them. Can you tell me who they are? Because I'm happy to make the call.
Olympias, yeah, the two there were the five who were working on the compromise. Of course, it was McCain and John Warner and Lindsey Graham. Originally, were opposed to this bill. They've since apparently rolled over, but they should be contacted, I would think. And then the two Republican senators from Maine, Olympia Snow and Susan Collins. And then you've got Lincoln Chafee from Rhode Island. He's considered a moderate. And George Voinovich in Ohio tries to portray himself as a moderate. I would think that all of those Republicans would be Republicans that would be amenable to a phone call.
Calling. Yeah. We should be calling, all
yeah.
of us.
Yeah,
well,
absolutely.
Thank you so much. And, keep up the good work. I love your show. I listen to it every day.
Thank you so much, Susan.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Bye now. Dara in Felton, Delaware. Hey, Dara.
Hi. Great to talk to you.
Thank you.
Bad subject, though.
Yeah.
I just talked to Senator Biden's office, and they don't even seem to know anything about this at all, or else they're playing dumb. I'm a veteran. My husband's a military retiree, and this makes me sick.
Yeah. So Senator Joe Biden's office doesn't know if there's anything going on with the cloture vote, right?
Yeah, or else they're playing dumb, one or the other. I don't know.
Yeah. How very strange. Oh, very strange. Well, thank you very much, Dara. I appreciate the call. It may well be that they're playing dumb. I don't know. It's possible. Caroline in Tempe, Arizona. Hey, Caroline. We have just a few seconds here.
Yeah, hi, Tom. I just wanted to know, can't the Supreme Court strike this down if they pass it?
Well, Gordon Smith, the Republican from Oregon, went on the floor of the Senate about 3 hours ago and essentially said, we're going to let the Supreme Court knock this thing down. We're going to pass a bill that we know is unconstitutional, and we're going to let the courts deal with it. But it'll be 2 years before the Supreme Court does. And in those 2 years, look at all the damage they can do. And Bush gets his get-out-of-jail-free pass, and the Republicans get to hold power for 2 more years. That's the problem.
I see.
Yeah. Caroline, thanks for the call. I mean, that's the rationalization that the Republicans are already making, is, we got nothing to worry about here. The Supreme Court's going to knock this thing down. So, it's just fine. 45 minutes past the hour.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
A song will lift as the mainsail shifts and the boat drifts onto the shoreline. And the sun will respect every face on the deck the hour that the ships come in. And the sands will roll out a carpet of gold for your weary toes to be a-touching. And the ship's wise men will remind you once again that the whole wide world is watching.
Yeah, and that's pretty much how it is right now. Okay, here's my understanding of what's going on, and I think that this is right. I'm pretty sure that I've got this right. The Democrats polled their members when the Republicans passed this thing out of the House of Representatives. The Democrats in the Senate polled their members, and they did not have 40 senators, 40 Democratic senators who were willing to stand up and vote against this bill, or who were willing to sustain a filibuster, let's say. And so because they knew that they couldn't sustain a filibuster, they didn't have 40 or 41 members who were willing to stand up and say, yes, we will refuse to stop talking. We will filibuster this thing. They said, okay, we'll go for the next best thing. Let's cut a deal with the Republicans. We won't filibuster this if you'll let us propose amendments. And the Republicans said, fine. And so now they're arguing about amendments. And the amendments are being knocked down one after another. And the thinking among the Democrats was, maybe we can make this a little less toxic. So we'll see. Joni in Townsend, Massachusetts. Hey, Joni.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to tell you that I was watching C-SPAN.
Yeah.
When they put up the Spector Amendment, which was co-sponsored by Pat Leahy, as I understand it. And Gordon Smith did vote for it.
Oh, I know. He voted to make this bill a little less toxic. But when we called his office this morning and said, is Senator Smith going to vote for the overall bill, regardless of whether it's amended or not, the answer was yes.
Okay.
And so, you know, yes, Gordon Smith is on the side of the torturers and let's use rape as a weapon of interrogation.
So did you get all four of the Republicans who voted for it?
For the Spector Amendment?
Yeah.
No, I don't have that list. Do you?
Yes.
Okay.
It was Gordon Smith, Lincoln Chafee, John Sununu from New Hampshire, and of course Arlen Specter. Now, Olympia Snow did not vote.
Yeah, it's interesting that John Sununu.
He's odd. He does these things sometimes.
Yeah, occasionally he falls back into being an actual old-fashioned conservative, kind of Goldwater conservative, you know.
But he's much younger than we are.
Yeah, yeah, so, okay. Well, that means that, people should call John Sununu and say vote against this. Because the message that I got, my understanding of this thing is that the only way to stop this bill is to get six Republicans to go along with all the Democrats and vote no.
Right.
It's gonna have to be a 51-49
vote.
So
those four to work on, and Olympia Snow, who didn't vote, and then it's also Ben Nelson, who is the Democrat who voted with the Republicans.
Oh yeah.
So
and Ben Nelson has done that so many times. It's yeah.
That's true.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Jenny, thanks a lot.
Okay.
Thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.
To us there in Massachusetts. Appreciate it. John in Sacramento. Hey, John.
Oh yeah, hi. I was just listening to that last call, and that's pretty depressing. I was the one that had called and suggested calling Paul Sarbanes' office and Mark Dayton's office to, because they are both retiring Democrats. And what's interesting about both of them, if you recall, Sarbanes was a congressman and voted to impeach Nixon when he was on the Judiciary Committee, so I thought he would be a good one. And Dayton, of course, is a descendant of someone who actually signed the Declaration of Independence. And if these two can't stand up and fight for us now...
But these two are Democrats.
They're both Democrats, and
so,
they're both retiring.
Yeah, the problem is not that we need one Democrat to come forward and say, I'm going to filibuster this, but that we need, actually, it's past the time now for 40
right.
Democrats to come forward and do it, because the Democrats have apparently made a deal with the Republicans that they won't filibuster this.
Well, yeah.
So now it becomes even more difficult, what the people of the United States have to do, and we'll see if the political will is here in America. And hopefully even maybe some conservative talk show hosts will be out there saying, hey, we believe in the United States as well. Although, frankly, I doubt it. We'll see.
But I was hoping that if there was anybody that would filibuster, it would be one of those two senators. They have nothing to lose, and their background says that this is what they should be doing, especially someone who is a direct descendant of someone who signed the Declaration of Independence. Can you believe this?
Yeah, you would think.
And the thing with, you know, just for a little side note there, when Paul Sarbanes voted to impeach Nixon on that 1974, Trent Lott was a congressman at that time and voted no to impeach Nixon. Now he's a senator from Mississippi. People that don't realize that, Trent Lott voted no to impeach Richard Nixon. Can you believe that?
He was a
punk congressman at the time, and now he's a punk senator.
Yeah.
This is a horrible day for America when you can't get 41 senators to vote no against this.
I know, to vote no against Churchill. With this brilliant article in the editorial in the New York Times. Ed, thanks for the call. Alex in Eugene, Oregon. Hey, Alex, we have about a minute left before we've got to wrap the show here.
Hey, I think that what this all comes down to is power and how over the past 5 years people have become to feel less and less powerful. And so I think the only way they can really begin to experience power now is to experience it through their government. And
but see, I don't think that the American people are with
willing
Congress
to put up with this.
I think the average person, frankly, is just not paying attention.
A lot of people out there that are supporting this. I mean, I know there are a lot that are against it, but not nearly as many as there should be.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
I just don't know. I haven't seen any reasonable polls. I'm just astounded, frankly, whether there are, you know, what the numbers, how the numbers break out. I'm just astounded. And we shouldn't give up today. And then, of course, there's always November. And there's always two Novembers after that. And there's always, you know, day by day, organizing at the precinct level, getting out there, getting people elected. I mean, dog catcher, starting to get involved in the local political structure and building things. Tomorrow, Bernie Sanders and David Bossie says 9/11 was all Clinton's fault. Yeah, right.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
And remember, democracy begins with you. Tag your ad. We'll see you tomorrow.